we got planned to get to on today's show, but obviously the big news of the weekend was Quinshon Judkins being arrested in Broward County, Florida for misdemeanor domestic violence. We're not going to do, I know when the police report came out, I knew that that's been read on air. I think if you have any history with that, which my family does, it's going to be a little triggering to read. I don't think we need to relitigate that. There are places to find that. But I think, you know, the NFL's declined comment. The Browns have said they're looking into this matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, I, like everyone else, had the same reaction when this came out, which was, oof, not again. And obviously, this harkens back to Michael Hall Jr. last year in August. But it goes beyond that. It goes into the recent Perrion Winfrey. It goes into
Mike McDowell.
Even to a bigger degree, the Deshaun thing. And it really is like I was just kind of turning the corner and being like, cannot wait to see this. Quinshon is a big part of that. And I think that probably was another big gut punch, was equal parts. I think a lot of Browns fans are excited about Quinshon, the player.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also had the reminder that, oh, hey, Quinshon's here, which means Nick Chubb isn't. There were just a lot of ways in which that was a gut punch.
Well, the Nick Chubb part of that, too. That's what a lot of people focused in on. It's like, yeah. if you just signed Nick Chubb, we wouldn't have to worry about this. And now we don't know what the running game's going to be at all this upcoming season. Because if it's Ford and Sampson, that's not going to be anything that elicits a bunch of confidence.
Yeah, well, because I don't think anybody sees Jerome, who I think he's...
And I like Jerome. You know I like Jerome.
I think he's almost a little underrated. He put up really good stats last year behind a bad O-line. I still think Jerome can be a significant piece of this thing going forward, even though it looks like he's going to spend one more year here and go off because they've got Judkins and Sampson. But I can't blame Browns fans for looking at this and just putting it as another check mark against Andrew Berry. Because even though the reports on Quinshon were that this was not even on anyone's radar in the pre-draft process,
mm-hmm.
that he was a pretty clean prospect.
Well, so that's what makes this hard for me. It's like, so he's a pretty clean prospect, but are they just avoiding some of what should be red flags, even though you have what is a clean prospect with no off-the-field records? But is there something they're missing, continually missing with some of these guys that are clean until they're not? And also on the other side of this, how much can I actually put at the feet of Andrew Berry when you have somebody that is perceived to be just that, a clean prospect, and then something like this happens, and he's only been in the building for a couple months?
So this is a great point. That first point that you made of how much can you, not how much can you put at Andrew Berry's feet, but like what's your process look like? Teams are, and there's a big reason for it, teams usually skirt the idea of what due diligence they do about people off the field. I think the Browns preceding Andrew Berry have shown you with their handling of Johnny Manziel and Justin Gilbert on up through other prospects that their process does leave something to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing of like, all right, was he clean or did you just not inspect who he was and what might be out there about
Or did you think you're getting a little bit of a, and I didn't get this vibe, by the way, with the NFL draft at all. Did you think you're getting any sort of value with Judkins? Because it's not, no one when they took him at 36 was like, oh, wow. Yeah, that was first round talent that happened to go to 36. It's like, no, he was, you know, maybe second round, early second round, and you got him in the appropriate spot. Like, it's so confusing because, like, Andrew Berry comes from the Howie Roseman, we'll take Jalen Carter and anybody that comes with problems school of thought. And so we know they open their arms to these guys. But in the case of Judkins, how much of this should they actually be tasked with when he hadn't shown any signs previously of being a nuisance or a problem?
Yeah. And I think, because again, I think you have to open the door of, all right, well, what does your process look like? They're not going to tell you that, even though we do know a fair amount of teams might have. They might have a whole team of guys designed to fix situations like this. That doesn't mean that they do the greatest job researching any of these kids. And the reality is, I'd never heard anything like this from Judkins. It doesn't matter. Because it doesn't really matter when you had the Mike Hall thing. Who the reason Mike fell was some immaturity concerns that then played out in the legal system. Perrion was a fourth-round pick when he could have been a second-round pick because of things and maturity issues and things that ended up in the legal system. Obviously, you traded for Deshaun after he was accused of all this stuff and then helped him navigate through the waters of that in a way that didn't necessarily help anyone, including Deshaun trying to get settled here in Cleveland. So, like, when it comes to Quinshon, I'm liable to believe. Like if they really did do a thorough search on him, I'll take their word on it. It's just not going to matter because you've already had your three strikes and then some. So like it becomes a zero sum thing of, well, it didn't really matter if you did this. It didn't really matter how much you investigated him. The reality is, this is what happened, and it's showing a clear sign of off-the-field issues and bringing these guys in. And the problem with that is, when you're Howie Roseman, you can do it because you're winning 13 games a year.
Right.
The sad reality is, in the NFL, you only really get to do this and have this as a habitual part of your program if the on-field results. Fans will look, to some degree, the other way. But that is based in success.
Yeah, but so I think the difference here, though, is so like Howie, for instance, can go after Jalen Carter. And in many instances, the Browns, when Barry was going after Perrion Winfrey, who had elite talent, but obviously went in the fourth round for reasons that we know, or go after Deshaun Watson, or go after any of these other guys that come with known problems ahead of time, I look at that very differently than I look at this with Quinshon. Like, I just do. Now, I do think there's a problem in how they assess people and players and everything under the sun, for sure. But, like, this isn't them taking Quinshon with the idea that he had an incident pop up his junior year, or his, you know, an incident pop up at Ole Miss, and all of a sudden they should have been alarmed to the idea that he's a problem. Like, this was out of the blue and seemingly out of character for him in many ways.
Yeah, but you still have the track record. Like at some point, there's some disconnect there that if it continues to happen, and I understand, like, some of this guys is just, it is the business you're in. Like, you it's very rare you're going to find 54 altar boys at any given point. But if this was the first of the incidents you could fall back on, man, everybody seemed to think that this wasn't going to be an issue with him. But the reality is, there were just so many things. And I do think, like, I think they have kind of even pointed out with some of their moves that they have, you know, Mason Graham, that's a character guy. Dylan Gabriel is a character guy.
Well, I wonder if they thought Quinshon was a character guy too, though. That's the problem. Like, somewhere in their assessment, they've gotten this wrong. And somewhere in their assessment, but it's so tough to tell them they got it wrong when, I mean, how can you predict somebody's going to eventually allegedly strike a girl that he's dating? Like, that seems like such a hard thing to be like, I know that this is going to eventually happen with this guy, or this guy seems like the type of character to eventually have this happen, when we have no track record of that. It seems so hard to do.
216-474-0092. Should Andrew Berry be taking heat for the latest misstep legally from a Cleveland Browns player, Quinshon Judkins, being arrested for misdemeanor domestic battery over the weekend? And I just think, like, at some point, I can't give you the benefit of the doubt, even if we look at the prospect and understand that there weren't any known issues in the first place. It's kind of your job to know, to find out whether there are known issues or not. We got quick hits coming up at 2:40. We've got Justin Latta, Locked On Guardians, at 3:20. A Jace LaViolette. Get ready to know that name. The Gardo's taking him 27th in the first round, and a big change in how they draft. That actually does matter to how we think of the organization anyways. We got the Peterlin Pass coming up at 3:40, and then Sam Bruckhaus, Sumer Sports, at 4. We will get into all the ins and outs of where he thinks this Browns team is, where they project the Browns to be, and, of course, the top 10 quarterback list that had a familiar name atop it. Did not please Browns fans altogether, but 216-474-0092. Anik Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media. Social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Should Andrew Berry be taking heat for this, and what this means for the Browns running back room, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. So we had somebody tweeting us both. Saying, you know, we know, or he knows that we want Andrew fired, but you can't blame him for the Judkin things. I believe Kevin was really my source of frustration last year at the end of the season. I don't necessarily think Andrew's done a tremendous job, but I don't really want, I think there's a chance he could be fired this year, but I don't really want him to be. I just think Andrew, this is one of those things where if you were coming off 11-6, I don't know it impacts Andrew Berry the same way as if you were coming off 3-14 and the failure of the Deshaun trade, which he germinated, or his front office germinated, which is the worst trade in NFL history. I don't think it's hyperbole to say Andrew Berry needs a win right now. And at the very least, He doesn't need another L like this.
So he definitely needs a win. I have a hard time putting this as an L at his feet right now. I just do. And this is where we started to get to in the first segment. Like the idea that, there's other ones that you can predict and you can see coming, and they roll the dice. And I think Andrew Berry and guys like Perrion Winfrey, he was willing to do that early on in his time there. But with Quinshon, we didn't have any sort of red flags or any sort of signs that anything like this was coming. And it's not as if he's been in the building and he's been around the Browns for a long time. It's been there for 2 months, you know? It's just like, I just don't... If we were to consult everyone else across the league and how many teams would have taken Quinshon Judkins out because of character concerns, that answer would have been zero.
That is... So I will say, I think you're driving at something that is fair. If this was a ISA... Meaning, like, we didn't have Mike Hall before that. We didn't have Perry on. We didn't have Deshaun. Because that's... We're averaging one incident a year here. With people he brought in. It's not like this is a John Dorsey thing. I do think it's going to be really interesting because this always comes out over the next 7 to 10 days. Do we have any of the NFL reporters saying, hey, actually other teams did look into Quinshon?
And that would change it completely,
by the
way.
And I think that's going to be what...
That would completely change my tune on this.
To me, that's where I think if... Because here's the thing. To me, it's a pattern. Even though Quinshon maybe didn't fit the profile of the other guys you brought in that had problems, you can't deny that the others happen. But I will say, all of a sudden, I would be probably tune up that heat a little bit on Andrew if it does turn out at any point that all the Browns really had to do again, much like many of the cases of guys who've gotten in trouble here previously, all you had to do was look and they didn't look. That, I think, yeah, will be something that could really turn this into an even worse situation.
Only thing I can find, and trust me, I searched high and low because it's part of our job to be able to research and try to find these things out, but you just can't find anything credible at his time at Ole Miss before Ohio State. But the idea was is that there certain message boards and certain fashions of that that college, they believe that basically that end came because Lane Kiffin got frustrated with him, got tired of dealing with him. He wanted a lot of money, and they basically offered him pennies with the idea of we'd rather see you leave than hang around. And that's the only sign of anything that comes remotely close to him being a problematic human.
Now, how the arrest for misdemeanor domestic battery over the weekend, I think, should impact how we think here. Beyond a lot of the obvious reaction if you read the police report, stuff like that, I do think that until proven otherwise, we should expect this to impact his rookie year in some way because... You follow this out to what happened with Mike Hall Jr. Or really any, but there is, this is set in stone now in the CBA as part of the personal conduct policy. And if it goes down one or two avenues, I think we can, at this point, I'd be surprised if there wasn't something involving the league from here.
Well, the NFL doesn't care about whether or not they think you actually are guilty or not guilty.
Yes.
They care about the perception of it all and the perception of it right now. And if you read the police report, that does him no favors, okay? Yeah. And so the perception right now is not great for him. So I would expect 6 games, and if he ends up getting it pleaded down and he gets 1 or 2 games knocked off, okay. But I'm living with the idea that it's going to be 6 games and we'll start and we'll go from there.
And if something... I think that should be the expectation.
It's kind of like Ortiz with the Guardians, where it's like, right as of right now, until we hear otherwise, I'm just assuming he's not playing baseball for the rest of the season.
Yep.
You come with evidence that shows me otherwise, okay, we can talk, but as of right now, you should play with that the assumption attached to that. Same thing here with Judkins.
And I just think, specific to the running back room, I think whether it's Jerome Ford or Dylan Sampson, or really any of the other guys in that room, this does afford you an even bigger opportunity. I think we probably have all slept on Jerome a little bit. When I say we, I'm including myself here.
Not me, though, right? We can take me off of that? Excuse me?
I feel like we've equally slept on Jerome.
Excuse me?
We're on the lesser end of the Jerome Ford sleeping.
How many times have I yelled about his yards per attempt to you?
I don't honestly know you ever have.
Is he gaslighting me right now, Mac?
I promise.
Is he gaslighting me?
I'm not attempting to do this. These are not my shenanigans.
You might be gaslighting me right now.
JP has gone a bad for Jerome quite a bit.
Can you pull sound of it? Because I honestly...
What?
This doesn't even sound familiar to me.
Listen, I might not even want this defense a few months from now, okay? So we might have this... This might be a good thing that you're trying to, like, Men in Black erase any Jerome Ford love that I've had.
I'll give it to you if you believe you've done it. Because I believe you. Why would you gaslight me to the opposite?
Hey, if you want to remove me from any sort of attachment I have with certain players, and we can just start the whole thing fresh. Outside of Shador, obviously, then we can do this whole thing.
No, it's no nothing. You gotta pull back on that too.
I'm a little surprised. I like that Max at least got the memory to back it up here. Yeah, because you know, I mean, we've gotten in yards per attempt debates forever. Jerome Ford averaged over 5 yards attempt per carry last year. I'm big into yards per attempt. There go, he's my type of running back.
All right, so I do think this gives him an even... I think
He's a home run hitter.
Well, I think given that he's on a one-year deal, I think Jerome probably had a little bit more... This whole thing was cooked a little bit more in the books of Quinshon Judkins, stylistically, because Quinshon profiles as a bell cow back, Jerome doesn't. But if you look at it, he's also on a one-year deal, and Quinshon, although he's yet to sign his contract, which is another interesting part of this... There were a lot of things that, like, I think Quinshon probably didn't have to do that much to take this job. This is the kind of thing, if you don't know when this kid's going to be available, all of a sudden that could really go in favor of Jerome going into a contract
year. Well, not only Jerome, but also how about Dylan Sampson, too? Yep. I mean, like, when we interviewed Dylan Sampson a couple weeks ago, what was that, 2-3 weeks ago, somewhere in that age? Somewhere in that range. I think you were off for that day. And I remember, like, laying it out for Dylan. I was like, does it bother you a little bit that you were the SEC Offensive Player of the Year? You were he set all sorts of different rushing records at Tennessee. Basically, when it came to college football, there's nothing more that man could accomplish next to winning a Heisman. Like, there's nothing more he could have done. Going into that playoff game against Ohio State, the game plan was tried to stop him, and they were able to do so, but that's why they won the game as handedly as they did. And I remember, like, Dylan was very humble about it all, and he had such a, well, you know, I could be better in certain areas approach, but I want to almost yell for him. Like, he is very, very talented. And this type of thing, we talk about Wally Pipp all the time in sports radio in general, but this is the type of thing. Like, maybe you get Wally Pipped in this, and Sampson in the first 6 weeks, while Judkins is on the sideline, showcases why he was so good in college.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting. Sampson and Ford kind of profile as similar backs, meaning... I hate the term change of pace in 2025, but that's kind of how they've been thought of. Receiving, third down back, speed guys, home run hitters. We've thrown a bunch of football jargon at it. I would imagine that these guys, because here's the thing. I don't know. I think the Browns know they need to return to the running game. And if you don't have one guy like Judkins who might be able to give you 20 rushes a game and then you got another guy that gives you 10 or whatever – well, then between the three or four guys you have, if Quinshon's not out there, everybody gets 10 carries, and we'll see, you know, we'll play the hot hand on any given day.
And it's what they might end up having to do. I'll be interested to see how they actually appropriate out the touches and how this changes what their offensive game plan is and everything else with the sorts. But this is an opportunity for Sampson in a big-time way, and I'm chalking it up. Like, let's see what you did. As a fourth-round back, we can't expect things.
So this is difficult because on one hand, I look at it and go, well, Jerome's a nice piece. I think the two run. I actually like both running backs, even though, like a lot of people, I probably would have skewed Travion more than I would of Quinshon. But I think they didn't because they knew they had Jerome there. And I do think that's like one potential flaw in the Death Star here is I think Quinshon's your only bell cow back. And that could be something that rears its head early in the season if he does see a suspension, that would be the time you kind of need him up against bigger defenses, better defenses, and against better teams.
Well, you can see why a lot of Browns fans immediately went to why Nicholas Jamal Chubb is not on the team and how devastating that is now.
Yeah, you know, and the worst part is, I'd even just started to forget he was with the Texans. So
get him?
My first thought is, well, it opens the door for, he's in Houston.
Well, how much, it's not like Houston, so Houston's got a battle right now. They have like four different running backs that are basically battling for their starting job. It's not like Houston wouldn't be open. It's just the problem would be you'd have to give up some sort of draft compensation to then get Nick Chubb back, which would be one of the biggest omissions of we screwed up.
All right.
That you just can't, I just don't think you can do in the NFL.
I'm not saying I think there's a good chance he wins a job. I actually think Nick ends up being their bell cow back at some point this year. I would actually lock that. I'm gonna lock that in. All right. So much
very
like your Jerome
you.
Ford.
Very
love,
brave of you.
He's got Joe Mixon in front of him who's got money. That actually is more of a stronger take. Thank you very much.
Yeah, very brave of you. Thank you for all your service today. And when walking in, a very supportive Nicholas Jamal Chubb is going to be a bell cow back in Houston.
I love your take that you're a big yards per carry guy.
I am a big yards per carry guy.
There's people who are against that.
You were when you were fighting for Nick Chubb last year when he was getting 3.1 yards per carry. That was the argument. You said you weren't a big yards per carry guy.
No, I said that's not the only thing that tells the tale of the tape. In the last three games, he looked better than the first three games.
I don't know about that.
Oh, no. I don't know about that one. Oh, no, Johnny Gaslight. I'm not letting you have this one.
You already gaslighted me once. This is not going to go down where I gaslight you in return.
Forgetting something is not the same thing as gaslighting someone. I'm allowed to forget a take that you had about Jerome Ford when we haven't had the conversation in 6 months.
We should explore that a little bit. Is forgetting something the same as gaslighting somebody? I'm not sure at this point.
I think that's a form of gaslighting right there.
I know.
216-474-0092. What does this mean? What is if Quinshon does end up missing time for a suspension this year off on the heels of the misdemeanor domestic battery arrest? What does this mean for the Browns running back room?
By the way, first six games of the season we've already talked about if we've mentioned how hard it is. Frank Schwab, when he came on with us a month ago, said it's the hardest schedule he's seen for the first 6 weeks in 20 years of covering football. Think about how much harder it makes if you don't have a run game.
A big, bold prediction for your Cleveland Browns in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
From the latest news and rumors around the sports world,
go Angels!
To the sound bites you need to hear,
hurry.
It's quick hits.
All right, Cleveland's own The Miz. Mm-hmm. Mike Mizanin joined the Dan Patrick Show last week and gave a bold prediction for the Cleveland Browns.
Are you a Browns fan?
Huge Browns fan. We're going to the Super Bowl.
To watch.
No, we're going to the Super Bowl.
No, you're not.
Joe Flacco is taking us there. If he gets injured, we'll take one of our other three.
Yeah.
We got a big quarterback room.
You're not bringing Deshaun Watson, though.
No. We got Stefanski's an amazing coach. We know that. He's a two-time coach of the year. There's a reason for that. He knows how to get the best out of quarterbacks. And so now he has two rookies, and I even think Kenny Pickett could be something.
All right. Now, do we think Miz really means any of this, or was he playing the heel by propping up a potentially crap team?
I don't know. He's just so pro-Cleveland. I like the Miz a lot. I remember when the celebrity all-star game was in town, when the whole all-star festivities. Lisa and I went to the celebrity all-star game, and the Miz was awesome. All those reality guys are so good about that stuff. I don't know why other famous people just aren't good at that, but all the like reality TV people, I think it's because the reality TV people always just wanted to be famous and they care about being famous so much, so they love all the adoration, but he was awesome. So I'll always go to bat for him, even if that's a obviously ridiculous take.
So it's funny. I felt the same way when he was here in studio with us. Because Miz, when he was younger, had kind of a reputation in wrestling. That is the nicest, hardest working dude. And he was totally trolling Dan Patrick, though. I don't think it's a heel turn. The heel turn was a couple years ago when he claimed to be a Rams fan going into the Super Bowl. Have not forgot that, Miz. But no, we're pro Miz here.
He claimed to be a Rams fan?
Didn't he? He wore like the Rams jersey. And it was part of a heel program at the time because he did it in Cleveland. It was a whole to-do.
That's not good. He's like our guy as far as like people that prop up the city all the time. Like
really does.
That's like a real. That's a bad thing.
It was a bit. I can give him credit for a bit.
Not a very good one, I guess.
I haven't forgotten it.
Greg McElroy speaking today said people very much in the know, according to one of his sources. His sources would be very much in the know about this situation. Says Nick Saban isn't done coaching. I don't think this is reality. You know, Saban's really good on TV, by the way. Way better than I think a lot of people gave him credit for.
Way better than Urban.
Oh, my God, a million times better than Urban. And I like Urban on TV, too, though. Urban's got his moments where he's really good. But Nick Saban is, I think a lot of people slept on him. I think they thought that it was going to be like how Belichick would be on TV. And it's just not. He's very good on TV. But I don't see him coaching again.
I just don't see him coaching in college. I could see the NFL. I think that at his age, I mean, he's 73, 74 now. College is just... But, I mean, look, Pete Carroll just got the jump at 72, 73. I could see a team going out there and saying, for 3 years, 4 years, will you come be our head coach and give him one more try? Absolutely.
I'm just trying to figure out which team that would be. If Alabama's out of the equation, although I think Alabama would shoot DeBoer into the sun if it gave him an opportunity to hire back Saban.
I think, yeah, definitely after last year, too, missing the playoffs and whatnot.
Wouldn't that be something if he just like, I want to come back, and Alabama's like, okay.
Why not the Cleveland Browns in 6 months' time?
Okay.
I mean, granted, Nick Saban's going to want more power than anyone in that organization's willing to give.
I mean, it's part of the reason why you got so frustrated with the sport at the collegiate level is dealing with the NIL. Maybe the NFL would make more sense for him. I just don't know that
what
many people
Miami?
Are.
This guy's under contract. They can't move off of him, I think, Tua, for another year or two.
Yeah.
Last-ditch effort to save Tua's career, bring in his old ball coach and get an adult in the room as opposed to Captain Cool Kid Mike McDaniel.
And we know the owner with Ross is very much about the celebrity side of things and his pursuit of Tom Brady, and he likes that. He likes big names.
Omaha! And it cannot lie. Uno is being added to as a table game to casinos in Las Vegas, at least temporarily. The Uno Social Club. Sounds interesting. Is a temporary setup at the Palms Casino Resort from July 18th, that's a couple days from now, to July 20th, a special promo event aimed at enhancing game night experiences. How does Johnny Vegas feel about this?
I like it. I like the idea that you should be able to play more board games, if we're being honest about it. Like, what board game, if you could gamble on board games, what board game would you do the best in?
Probably Candyland. And I think you can really corner the market on Candyland, yeah. Life? Oh, I used to live life, man. I'm telling you.
I don't know if you're giving me serious answers or just in like mocking the question. I'm not sure.
It's a great question.
I don't know. Monopoly for me. I don't know. I always thought I'd love to be able to gamble on Monopoly.
I wouldn't.
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
That game is a fickle mistress. That game
so
is just
so is Uno though.
Yeah, but
could you imagine the amount of backstabbing you can do and they're talking about collusion. There's a lot of colluding in Uno.
You don't want to be at the table for 4 hours playing the same game of Monopoly. They really would have to decide, is this Uno or Uno from Hell? Because Uno from Hell, where if like where you can stack, draw twos and draw fours,
yeah.
where you just keep picking until you get the card you need. That again, that you need to do a much more sane version. But the thing I like about Uno is it's tougher to rig if you're like a gaming body as opposed to a game like cards where there's just. It's a lot more simple math involved.
So obviously, this is in person, so it's a little bit different. Can I ask you a judgment call on something, though?
Sure.
So my little nephew is 8 years old, and him, my sister, my mom, and myself started playing Uno at nights together, like through the phone,
yeah.
You know? And it's like the only way I really get to interact with this kid. He's 8 years old. We play for like 20 minutes at a time. And so we were playing for a stretch. It was like maybe like 2 months.
Uh-huh.
Every single night we were playing. Like everyone got into it. Like he was playing. He's more than capable. He's 8 years old. And then we started catching on to the idea that he was cheating with my sister.
Ah.
And it was very, like once you noticed it, it became very obvious that they mm-hmm. were cheating together and they were texting each other, but then they were also trying to line up in the way the game works where you could sit next to each other in the game and then be able to help each other out.
Yeah.
And so I called him out on it and mm-hmm. I was like, you're cheating. Like you're clearly cheating. And I would do it in ways I'd be like, that's sus. You know, like little, like, you know, yeah. That's a little sus, isn't that?
Yeah.
And then he caught on and then now he doesn't want to play anymore.
Oh.
Now he's like, he's done playing. I would have gladly played and lost the game just to be able to play and hang out with him. But now he's like, I think he felt guilty that I called him out.
Oh,
should I just not call him out? No, he's not mad. But
no.
I think he knew he got caught cheating with his aunt.
No, I think. And by the way, it's funny. It's funny. Like you're cheating at Uno and you're doing. Who's really sus in this is your sister. That's some dirty pool right there.
Well, like, she wants to be the favorite. She wants to be the favorite.
Corrupting,
you know?
And a child to win at Internet Uno. That is some. By the way, my uncle would have done this.
She was
too.
Throwing games to make sure that he won. Like she was all in on it.
Yep.
How do you get to be the cool aunt? You get to be the cool aunt by, you know, throwing Uno games.
And by the way,
mom are just scratching out and clawing out trying to get wins.
Isn't she in the legal profession?
Yes, she is. Yes, she's an attorney.
Not a great look for attorneys. I mean, I think we got to really. We got to contact the board here. This is a real problem.
Yeah. Of all the things that attorneys have done, this crosses the line. Yeah.
With your 8-year old nephew.
The ethics are out of control with this one. Mark Cuban says he hated NBA players participating in the Olympics. Added on that Adam Silver wouldn't go for it, and that's why he sold his team. But is Mark Cuban right here? Should NBA owners be able to have a gripe with the idea that their players should not be participating in the Olympics?
Yes. 30 years ago, you needed the Olympics because you were still an emerging sport. And I don't think people realize how long ago or how short ago that really was. You don't need it anymore. And so your best players who are paid $80 million a year are going to be very shortly being out there for free. Yeah, it's a great look for international basketball. All you get is the injury risk. And all it takes is one Danny Granger. It takes one Paul George for it just to not work. So, yeah, I think he's spot on, even though I think he's fraudulent when he says, this is why I sold the team. That's that. No, you sold it because of the billions.
Yeah, I really don't mind him getting mad about it. And it seems like the wet blanket take to have, but also, like, I don't know. I didn't pay you to achieve a personal dream of winning the Olympics. I pay you to win an NBA Finals. I pay you to be on the court for me.
And I just think, like, honestly, now that so many teams are so good in terms of their development, so many countries are so good at their development, I kind of think it'd be more interesting if it was your college guys against people in the college ranks. As college player, as Euro players continue to infiltrate college, all of a sudden, what does that look like for a France? What does that look like for a Spain?
Yeah,
what does that look like for?
We won't care the same way.
No, but it's also the Olympics. We don't care the same way in general.
Yeah, that's fair.
Except for break dancing. We're in.
Omaha!
Terry Francona joins Bruce Bochy as one of only two active managers with 2,000 wins over the weekend. Only 13 managers in MLB history have accomplished that very feat. Does it feel wrong that Tito got his 2,000th career win in Cincinnati?
Talk about famous people calling people out. Was it Nick Lachey calling out Francona over the weekend?
Look at that.
He was like, I thought when they hired him, it was a good hire. He's not winning anything with this team.
That like, sounds okay. Like a Nick Lachey thought. Very superficial.
It is weird. It's weird that he wins the 2,000th in a Reds uniform, but everything about him being with the Reds is weird right now.
So you know me. Like, him being there, okay. I just wish he would have taken a better job because we all knew Cincinnati's not a great job. But I digress. I was really surprised how much this bugged me. I just think, like, he's got the two World Series wins in Boston. Then he spent the longest time in Cleveland. I would have loved for him to have one more year here, get the 2,000th win. And I know, like, that's not why you stay at a job. I do. I just, him in Cincinnati winning, we would have gone ape you know what for this. We would have done this big in a big way. In Cincinnati, it just kind of fizzled. It doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah, I saw Nick Lachey's tweet. I didn't even see like a congratulation. Oh, I saw a Lindor congratulations message where they had all sorts of different people from Tito's past saying great job on your 2,000th. And Lindor led that off. And I thought that was a nice touch.
216-474-0092. It was not on my radar. Then it happened. And after the fact, I was seemingly troubled by it. Does it feel wrong that Tito got his 2,000th career win in Cincinnati? And big news from the Cavs that tells us a lot about where they're going in the future. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.